My mother-in-law lives in a nursing home. This is a new development and not one that she has welcomed at all. My husband August insists on referring to the nursing home as anything but. He prefers to use the term assisted living campus or skilled nursing facility for seniors. Whichever way you slice it, whatever term you use to try and describe it, it's definitely far from being home. The first time that we went to the senior residential community for a visit, the smell of urine and industrial-strength disinfectant greeted us at the elevator door. My mother-in-law greeted us through tortured tears. Sitting up in her bed by the window, she kept insisting that this is not how it was supposed to be. This is not my life. Her protest suggesting that somehow, someone, somewhere had made a terrible mistake, and that if she insisted long enough, this mistake might eventually be cleared up. "Say hello to Glenna," she directed as she pulled herself together. She nodded to the frail, still woman in the other bed. Glenna, she explained, had had a stroke. She was partially paralyzed. She couldn't move or talk very well. "Glenna's my new roommate. Nobody ever comes to visit her," she gloated. "Her niece came once and hung up all those pictures, but nobody has come to see her since. She's all alone," she announced, as if Glenna wasn't lying right there looking at us. The pictures hung on the wall opposite Glenna's bed were all photographs of her in her prime. As a young woman, she had worked as a contract player for Columbia Pictures, and the photos of her hanging off the arm of Kirk Douglas revealed not only the stunning beauty that she was, but it painted a picture of an exclusive and glamorous life, the kind that they used to depict on the pages of Life magazine. The shrine on her wall defined her as confident and charismatic, posed and smoking. August nodded politely. "Nice to meet you, Glenna." "Hi, Glenna," I said awkwardly, hoping to overcompensate for the fact that all I could think about was how much I never wanted to end up like her. "Oh, boy," she answered as she reached her hand out toward me. "Oh, boy," she muttered again. "It's okay, she says it all day long," my mother-in-law complained, still as if her roommate were not right there. I tried to avoid looking directly at Glenna, lying half-covered. I felt the same kind of unease that I felt once when I accidentally walked in on someone in a public restroom, or when I watched the wind blow my friend's wig off of her head and across a busy street. But Glenna kept motioning for me to come and sit down, so I did. Sitting there, demonstrating the kind of patience that I reserve for when I'm being intentional about being polite, I started talking about my daughter, Gussie, who was away at summer camp, just to pass the time, and to my surprise, Glenna kept asking to hear more. Beyond just being polite, she seemed enthusiastic about the world of a 14-year-old girl whom she would probably never meet. I showed her a picture of Gussie. I read her one of Gussie's poems, and in return, she smiled at me, the way you smile when paying someone the sincerest of compliments. When I asked her about Kirk Douglas, she was eager to tell me that he was as handsome in person as he was in the movies. She told me, as if we were playing charades, that she used to be a leg model. I covertly surveyed her pale, thin, useless legs, trying to imagine them in their prime and trying harder to pretend that I wasn't thinking again about how much I never wanted to end up like her. I spent my time at the nursing home that evening visiting almost entirely with Glenna, feeding her cold tapioca pudding and lukewarm Lipton tea, while August visited with his mother, who was happy to lend me to Glenna, as if she were doling out favors to those less fortunate than she was. As we ended our evening, having successfully guessed every single one of the puzzles on Wheel of Fortune, I wondered just how likely it would have been that in another time and in another place, and under different circumstances, we would have ever given each other the time of day. Would Glenna have cared at all in her heyday about the poetry of a stranger's 14-year-old girl? And if life for me were turning out exactly as I thought that it should, could I have imagined mustering up the patience for an evening of watching Wheel of Fortune while feeding tapioca pudding to an elderly stroke victim who I had only just met? I washed my hands as we said goodbye and promised to come back soon. I hugged my mother-in-law, and as I waved from the door to Glenna, I worried about all the details and turns and twists, all the choices and decisions that ultimately came together to result in the cruel transformation of such a beautiful life. This is not supposed to be my life. Once safe outside, I took a deep breath of fresh air before I turned to August and asked what he wanted to do for dinner.